If you think you know the bluegrass state of Kentucky, you want to stay tuned, because I'm guessing you don't know about the state's weird history, which includes cannibal cowboys, goblins, hellhounds, curses, little green men, frogmen, and more. Noted paranormal researcher, folklorist, and author Steve E. Asher will be here to bring you the final conclusion to his strange tales about the Commonwealth. A 10-year veteran of corrections and law enforcement, Steve has toured the world in pursuit of the uncanny, and we're going to head down a shadowy path into Kentucky history. We'll head down that shadowy path next on Coast to Coast AM. Paranormal researcher Steve E. Asher is also a freelance writer and artist, as well as a lover of music. Previously, he worked over 10 years in law enforcement and as a correctional officer. He's a longtime researcher of the paranormal. He's traveled worldwide, most recently to Thailand, where he and his wife adopted one of their two sons. He's an avid lover of the nighttime. He said this, that when he feels most truly alive is in the darkness of the night, and therefore most productive in his paranormal research and writing. Steve has always had a deep interest in the Kentucky State Penitentiary. Since his early childhood, his late father told him of the many dark things that inhabit the oppressive halls of the prison. Once Steve began working there himself, he experienced some of the same phenomenon he was told about. He's the author of Hauntings of the Kentucky State Penitentiary, Hauntings of the Western Lunatic Asylum, Hauntings of the St. Vincent Academy, Short Stories for Darker Nights, Curious Counties from Kentucky, Dang Strange and Mostly True Tales, and his latest, More Curious Counties from Kentucky. Steve Asher, welcome back to Coast. How are you?
Hey, Richard. I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me back.
Oh, my pleasure. So I was mentioning to D.A. Roberts, who was on in the first half, he's also former law enforcement, and I've talked to other people on Coast and elsewhere that are either former or current law enforcement, and they have this fascination, obsession with the paranormal or cryptozoology. What's that all about? Because you're also former law enforcement.
You know, I was thinking about that. I'd actually had messaged him just right after y'all segment, and we kind of run around some of the same paths, but never had crossed those paths. I think it's something to do with the makeup. It's the same sort of people who are drawn to mysteries, or be it cold case files, things like that. You want to get to that end. You want to discover that hidden gem or that hidden truth or whatever. It's, I don't know, maybe it's something in the water. I'm not for sure, but I think that having the law enforcement background with the training that you have to receive for that and all that definitely helps to it. And it allows you to be able to kind of pick apart what would be more or less folklore, which I love folklore too, and what would tend to be more like facts.
If you're going to be a folklorist, you probably couldn't pick a better state to be in, right, than Kentucky. Why? What is it about Kentucky that lends itself to so many great legends and such an oral tradition, such great storytelling?
Well, there's so much going on with the various groups that come together, be it the settlers and the explorers, which, you know, we touch on in the book a little bit about David Crockett and having run-ins with yahoos, which is more or less like wild men of the woods, and of course the Cherokee and Shawnee and various tribes that had their own folklore and oral stories and beliefs of these type of encounters. And Kentucky's always had sort of it's neither here or there, kind of a middle ground. And there's a lot of hunting done here and a lot of things like that. But a lot of tribes kind of used this as hunting and went off of here. I'm not sure why. I know the Adena culture and some of the Mississippian cultures and stuff did stuff, but it was closer to the rivers and not so much right into the western and the central part. It's just a lot of strange history, and it comes from a lot of different cultures, but they cross over each other. A lot of times they see similar things just from different backgrounds.
So Kentucky was hunting grounds. It wasn't necessarily a place that you lived and settled down. It was you went there to hunt and then you left.
Well, I mean, it's a situation of, they kept the area sacred. They kept it, to where it was more or less prime hunting and, for hunter gathering and for things like that. It's not to say that people obviously they found cultures here and things like that, but overall, as I understand, a lot of the Native Americans, as I understand from research, is that they kind of felt it had sort of a, I don't say a haunted quality to it, but definitely that there was strong spiritual and, I don't want to say arcane elements to it, but they definitely looked at the land with respect and a little bit of fear.
And also, talk to me about the geography of Kentucky. Certain areas of Kentucky, like the Pennyroyal Plateau, are known as a karst region. What does that mean, karst?
Well, karst, I had said that to somebody before, and they thought I was my accent was coming out too strong. I said, I'm not saying cursed. I'm saying karst system with a K, K-A-R-S-T. That ties in with all the long fingers of the Mammoth Cave systems, and there's multiple systems. That's what people fail to understand, especially Western Kentucky, between coal mining, natural caves, water cut caves, things of that nature. It's just a Swiss cheese area. That's why a lot of times you'll hear about bridges, or not bridges, but roads falling in, or somebody's farm part of it falling in. Their lakes are gone, That's because of all that karst system that lays beneath it. And, the ground is, here's what you don't know. You roll the dice over a karst system. But there is a certain amount of, like you said, dealing with limestone and things of that nature that have a certain frequency. Running water has a frequency. Every living thing has a certain frequency. And I believe some of that maybe draws certain energies, maybe holds certain energies. And, there's, ley lines and things that run crisscross. I mean, if you believe in that element of it, run across everything, including this area.
So the premise of Curious Counties from Kentucky, Dang Strange and Mostly True Tales, and your latest, which just came out, I think, this week, More Curious Counties from Kentucky. You go through every county in Kentucky alphabetically, and each county has an element of high strangeness attached to it. And I'm actually astounded. There are 120 counties in Kentucky. 120, that's a lot, isn't it?
It really does. It seems like it is. I can only assume that back after the Revolutionary War, when people were still trying to come out in this area, when this is way back when they were going to call it Transylvania, the land beyond the trees, it was a dark and foreboding area. But a lot of the men that were involved with Revolutionary Wars, a lot of those guys were also the explorers. So they push out in certain areas, and as part of their legacy, there's not a bridge or anything, a stoplight hardly, that's not named after some explorer or things like that, especially in this part of the country. So I would assume some of that has to do with everybody getting a little nod and a little sort of appreciative remembrance in different spots.
Right.
So yeah, we've got a lot of counties.
How many have you been to personally?
Oh, Lord, I have to think. I'm sure I've not been to all 120. There's some that's way, way, way up in the Appalachians and stuff, and I've not been there yet. All the way up, northwest Kentucky. But I've been pretty lucky. I've probably been over 50 or 60 of them, yeah.
And so all 120 are covered off in both volumes of Curious Counties.
Correct, 60 apiece.
60 apiece. And as I say, you tackle these alphabetically. We won't do that. We'll kind of jump around here. But I want to start with Trimble County, Kentucky. And this is coal country. Tell me about human or semi-human frogmen seen there.
Okay, we're jumping right into the strangeness right off the jump. Okay, so again, this is where Bedford, Kentucky is. And this is like I said, you said it's very much coal county, a lot of caving, a lot of drilling, and back in the 1940s, really. I think before that, but as of more than just random people, you know, saying whatever, people that were doing drilling and things like that started having issues with, like, as you said, semi-human, like, frog-type men. Not so much lizard men. These things seem to want to, more or less, be left alone. They didn't seem as aggressive as the stories of lizard men. But they had a certain community. People reported seeing them traveling and hunting in, you know, pairs, you know, pairs of two to four, and implicated some tools, crude traps, be it in the water to catch fish, dig outs for turtles, things like that, and had a very rudimentary form of communication, be it hisses and clicks and stuff of that nature. So, you know, that's really, that you hear so much of that, especially if you hear talk of, I'm sure you've talked, I know you have, because I've heard your show forever, but talking about, like, the deep underground military bases and
right.
encountering these entities that seemingly come and go and just disappear. Very similar. But these guys don't seem so much to be aggressive beyond the fact of you messing with their young or getting into, I guess, their nests or whatever. But for the most part, they're semi-passive creatures, but they're definitely weird. It's definitely a sort of strange encounter that I don't know if I'd want to have.
Do they catch flies with their long tongues?
That one I don't know. They probably catch anything they got close enough to with their long tongues. I've heard of chickens and some small livestock that wandered off in the woods, you know, not coming back.
And these stories go back to the 1940s. Are there more recent sightings?
You know, you're always going to have, like, somewhat of, you know, we saw something in the woods or something just down in sort of a swampy area or whatever. But, like, the heyday of it was really around 1940s up through the 1970s. And it seemed like once Bigfoot kind of come on the scene, this sort of faded back. And who knows, it could be a situation that the Bigfoot came into an area and these guys backed up. I don't know. Or they may have went underground. Literally, I'm not for sure.
Rockcastle County, that's near Lexington. Tell me about what's happening in Rockcastle County.
Okay, that's actually chapter 42. And like you said, it is not very far, maybe 20 or so miles from Lexington, Kentucky. And that's more north central. There's an area known as Clear Creek. And at one time, and I'm going to make sure I don't get the word wrong, Dispatana, and there was actually a play written about this town. And what makes it so interesting is there's a legend that states that once a year, the devil, like a physical embodiment of Satan or the devil or what you want to call him, Lucifer, pays a visit to the small town. And now he's not playing a fiddle or anything like that, but he's more or less there to trick people, maybe goad them into their pride, sort of to whatever reason, trying to whip them into this curious frenzy and lead them back to the land of the dead. I have no idea why that happened. I have no idea. I've not had any recent information on that, but it was a big enough legend that, again, they actually had written a play about that very thing.
Were these the types of stories that you were raised on? I mean, where was your family, did they come from that oral tradition where they would tell these kinds of stories, I don't know, while you were gathered around a campfire or the fireplace?
Yeah. I mean, it was a thing where, even though I was born in 1969, I was probably raised a lot more like maybe pre-boomer, a lot more with radio, a lot more with, you know, like you said, those old-timey stories around the campfire and, you know, Bloody Bones and the Stone Soup story and all these different, like, little kind of moral tales. And that probably had to do a lot with both my parents were Depression-era kids. I mean, I think my mom was not even a teenager when Pearl Harbor happened. And they were raised by older parents. So it's, you know, I step back another, I can relate a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit more to the boomers and before that. So Yeah, there's definitely that element. And the fact that, you know, a lot of my mom's people came from the French Huguenots that settled, you know, escaping at the time where they had this religious persecution to the mountains and areas where nobody wanted to live. But it's very, you know, I won't say rough cut, but, you know, people that were used to working with their hands and knowing how to survive in the lands. And those are the people who come from where they're at and really made a go of it.
Are
So, yeah,
people
there's
in
that.
the are people in the remote areas of Kentucky very superstitious?
Well, I mean, there's superstition everywhere. I don't know. Maybe if you spill salt, you may not throw it over your shoulder. I don't know if you knock on wood for good luck. You cross your fingers when you hope for something. Things that we maybe don't consider really serious, but you know, there's elements of that in everybody, but there's that. Yeah, sure, there's that. There's also, you know, again, vastly educated college people from the deepest parts of, you know, hill or holler country. So, you know, I don't want to just stereotype it and say, you know, they're out there with their bibbed overalls and shooting at critters and whatnot. Hey, we got that here in Western Kentucky too.
Right. We've just got about 3 minutes here before the break. I think we can fit this one. There's kind of a grisly story that comes out of Pendleton, Kentucky, or Pendleton County, Kentucky. Tell me about it.
Yes. Yeah, Pendleton. It was really crazy. April 1st, I think it was 2014. There were just a massive amount of horses found dead. I think it was over 50 horses. In fact, the landowner was cited with animal cruelty, and apparently the landowner hadn't been anywhere near the property. And this was fresh. So anyway, the examiner come out, and apparently, upon doing his inspection, cited many of the animals lay broken, I mean broken down, you know, dissectioned, but almost in a surgical manner. Spines, eyes, some of them brains, and many with sex organs were missing. And there had been some people who said there could have been a possibility of UFO, cattle mutilations, which even though they're horses, but you know, it's just one of those things that it was very weird. And the guy to this day has stated that he had no knowledge of it. And this is not the only ones that happen around Kentucky. I mean, that it happens anywhere where you have livestock for some reason.
Right, but horses you don't hear so much about. Although maybe I think it was one of the most celebrated, the early celebrated cases of animal mutilation, I think was a pony, if I'm not mistaken. All right, we're heading on into a break here, Steve. Stay with us. We'll come back. Paranormal researcher, folklorist, and the author of More Curious Counties from Kentucky, Steve Asher on Coast to Coast AM. A visit to a fortune teller might involve taking a peek into the future of your love life or maybe your financial life, but a woman in England reportedly didn't expect what she got from her psychic one day, advice about her life, period. Rebecca Wilkinson, who'd struggled with her weight since she was a teenager, hit 28 stones, that's about 404 pounds at her heaviest. She was depressed, anxious, and unhealthy. She tried to lose weight in the past, Wilkinson said, but what the psychic told her must have really gotten her attention, that she saw no life for her on her current path. Do what it takes, go to the extreme, or you will die, the psychic warned. So soon after, Wilkinson took the dramatic step of traveling to Turkey, where she underwent an operation called gastric sleeve surgery, which removes part of the stomach. A year later, she lost about 230 pounds and said her life's been amazing since heeding the words of her fortune teller. She's pain-free, eating better, enjoying walks and socializing. Wilkinson also started a new career and now has her eyes on a very special prize, a healthy pregnancy. As to why her psychic was so convincing, she explained that he saw things about her that nobody else could have known. So she trusted his knowledge of the danger she was in. You can read more of this story in the Highlight Carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. All right, when we come back, more curious counties from Kentucky with folklorist Steve E. Asher, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Steve E. Asher, folklorist, author, And his latest is More Curious Counties from Kentucky. This is the second volume. The first one, Curious Counties from Kentucky, Dang, Strange, and Mostly True Tales. And together, they chronicle high strangeness in Kentucky's, all of Kentucky's 120 counties. Let's see, Todd County. We're going to chapter 50 for this one, Steve. Todd County, Kentucky. Tell me about Frank Millen.
Frank Millen is an especially sad story. Everything was going very well for Frank Millen. Very kind man, family man. This, unfortunately, was during the time when TB, tuberculosis, was rampant, and he contracted this illness. And as things went on, obviously your body wears down, fighting, trying to fight this illness, and depression set in to the degree that he began to hear voices and even saw some shadows that, well, they urged him to go do things that he would not ever do. And after a long time of fighting this, whatever you want to call it, entity or malignant thought, he went and picked up a heavy axe from the yard. Well, at the end of the day, he had killed five family members, including himself, by some of them, of course, he had bludgeoned with the axe, but himself, he hung himself on the poor charge. And when the people come up, he was still holding one of the heads in their hand.
Dear Lord.
Yeah. To this day, you know, it's one of those things that that area is known for it, but it's one of those type of stories they generally don't speak much about. My God, why would you? Unless you're just looking for odd stories like myself. But no one ever said that he ever showed any signs, any indication of that kind of behavior. And some people even thought perhaps he had became under the influence of a spirit, a dark entity of some form. I don't know. It, again, this is strange, weird tales, and sometimes it's pretty ghastly. And that's, unfortunately, the chapter on Frank Millen.
And what time period did this occur in?
Oh, my goodness. This is, probably 1800s. I believe that was around the time when TB was really bumping through here. And understand, everyone knows Waverly. Everybody knows Waverly as a TB area, you know.
Right, one of the most haunted locations in America.
Correct, but there's also in this area, which is a little bit closer to Todd, which was the Western Lunatic Asylum, but it was also at one time a TB hospital. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of these different little places, they have different incarnations and lives due to what is needed at the time. And that's, you know, again, everything came down the rivers that way, and you could pretty much time which cities were getting what by how the traffic coming down, you know, from sailors and different people from different parts of the world. Just, you know, just like now, people fly from Greece to here or back and forth, and people carry illnesses back and forth, and you can pretty much know it by which places have the airports, which place have the river ports, and that's where everything started, which was not too far from Todd County.
So this tragic story of Frank Millen, who was dying from tuberculosis, had some sort of an encounter with a dark entity, which urged him to pick up a heavy axe, killed all five members of his family, and then he hanged himself on the front porch. How does that story come down to you? Is that a well-known story? Was it, you know, in the newspapers, or how did you first hear about it? Steve? Did we lose Steve? Oh. Steve, did you mute your microphone somehow? I'm not hearing Steve. Steve, if you can hear me, because I can't hear you, maybe hang up and we'll get Donna to call you back. All right, not sure what happened there. Maybe it's that same dark entity that talked to Frank Millen that's involved here. Do we have Steve back? No. Okay, we'll keep trying. Steve Asher, folklorist and the author of Curious Counties from Kentucky, Dang, Strange, and Mostly True Tales, and his latest, More Curious Counties from Kentucky. All 120 counties are covered off in these two volumes. Steve, do we have you back?
I am here, sir.
There you go. I don't know. What happened?
I tell you, it happens sometimes when I talk about this stuff. I'm not a super superstitious guy, but I tell you, whenever I touch on dark stories like that, I'll almost always, even when I do my own podcast, House of Asher, sometimes when I touch off on really dark stuff, it happens. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have a similar situation when I talk about the Crossroads, you know, the Robert Johnson story.
Right.
And it happened to me on three separate occasions. One with the late R. Gary Patterson. We were talking about it on my weekly syndicated show out of Toronto. We were talking about Crossroads, and his computer and everything just went haywire. And it took us a while to get him back on. We were right in the middle of talking about the Crossroads. It happened when I was doing a podcast with Mark Swain, who also talks about, you know, haunted rock and roll and these things. And we recorded like a 40-minute interview and on my Adobe Edition, my recording platform. And I saw the audio, the sound wave. Everything looked great. Finished the interview, hung up the phone, and I went to play it back. And it was all just sounded like gibberish. It was all scrambly, like it was backwards and strangest thing I ever saw or ever heard. And then I had Matt Swain on Coast to Coast. And we started talking about the Crossroads. And he just dropped off. The line went dead. Crazy.
You know, I think some of it's got to do with, you guys have a massive audience. And I think when people's minds are unified, call it collective consciousness, whatever, if people's minds are on a certain point, I think that has a certain draw. I think that has a certain weight to it. And that may have something to do with it, too. It is strange.
All right. Let's talk about Lee County. Lee County, Kentucky. What's going on in Lee County, Steve?
Okay. Well, this was an area where the Shawnee were pretty prevalent. And this is an area known as Lower Devil's Creek. Don't you love these little...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, let's move to Lower Devil's Creek. That sounds lovely. But it was a kind of rough, watered area. That's why they called it Devil's Creek, because, it was rough. So anyway, there was a mine there. Again, a lot of coal mining, a lot of silver, a lot of gold, all this stuff people were pulling out. Everybody knows about, like, silver and gold mines out west, but they were definitely here, too. So anyway, there was an area known as the Swift Silver Mine, and supposedly, at one time, Shawnee tribe hid their gold there, hid, like, a lot of gold there, and they were in the process of trying to discover. They found certain implements and different finely tooled golden relics, and it was not very long before that the gold just was gone, just like it was, like, disappeared. Some people swear that the Shawnee had put a curse on it, a magical curse to hide that, or protective. Maybe it's a curse to them, but protective to them. And they never found it. They never came across another scrap of silver or any sort of valuable ore anywhere near that area. In fact, it actually ended up, I believe, it flooded. And I don't even think you could even get to the mines anymore.
Wow. Gold, silver, coal, Kentucky. I mean, it's so many resources there. But the coal mine disasters, and you've got, not only do you have the coal mine disasters, you talked about tuberculosis, which swept through the state. So much tragedy, so much violence. You had the Civil War there. You had Indian Wars. Does that all play into all of the tragedy, the violence, the bloodshed, death? Does that play into why Kentucky has such a great amount of paranormal activity?
Well, I'm sure it does. I mean, but you also got to remember that the people that settled there had come through similar things in other places, settling in from other countries and other regions. It's one of those things. It takes a special type of person to want to settle a mountain or settle, you know, an area that is already inhabited by people. I mean, you know, there's no sugarcoating. You know, people are coming into someone else's area and trying to take over it. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be bloodshed. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that, you know, they talk about the bloodied earth of Kentucky, and that's something that was earned, you know, and it was one of those deals, again, that all of the various elements of the limestone and all these things, I really think, holds on to a certain modicum of that energy, be it good, be it bad, you know, because there's definitely good things that happened here. I don't want to sound like this is just like a horrible, you know, old country song or something, but there was definitely that part of our history, which is very dark, 100%.
This is a recent story. This is Lyon County, Kentucky. And this just goes back to July 20th, 2019. So a fairly recent occurrence in Lyon County. What happened?
Yeah, that's actually Chapter 12. Lyon County, I live in Caldwell County, and just adjacent to me is Lyon County, which Lyon and Caldwell used to be one county. And again, they broke it up, you know, for different Revolutionary War people, and sometimes even Civil War people, even after the fact of the war being over, you know, a lot of times they did give names to certain generals or whatever who fought bravely on whatever side. But yeah, this is July 20th, 2019. It happened at 11:30 p.m. And I had actually spoken to an officer. This happened around the penitentiary, the Kentucky State Penitentiary. I'm keeping that individual's name private due to the fact that this was something that, you know, they got a lot of flack for it because, you know, nothing happens there. What happens there stays there and whatnot. I've actually saw the report. So, but more or less, a UFO, because they weren't for sure what it was, came over the water in front of the penitentiary, swung out to the right over the housing, which was just regular civilian housing, giving off yellow light, and as weird as it sounds, sort of a gray, almost like a black light quality, but it didn't give off a really sharp shadow. I don't know how to describe it. It was almost like it muted the other light. I don't know why or what that meant. It had come over the wall stands, and then took off at a high rate of speed, out across the water, and shot up 90-degree angle and gone over it. Actually, over LBL and out past that way. Again, here we are back talking about LBL. And I had spoke to people off record, higher up at the penitentiary, talking to them about it. And the official record said, well, it must have been a drum. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, what do you think? And my contacts kind of said, well, we have certain things to tell if something's coming into our airspace. I won't say too much about it, but certain things to pick up on certain electronics. And they said none of that went off. Not a beep, not a whistle, nothing. And this was spotted by several different wall stands, and two or three of them made the same report. But I'm thinking they were probably suggested to put it was probably a drum. How are you going to send that to Frankfurt and they'll go, you can't secure the airspace over your prison? What's going on?
Right.
But, yeah,
right.
Very strange. Actually, the person who I had spoke to about that incident actually ended up leaving the penitentiary about a year and a half later. Just didn't, you know, couldn't deal with it because they stood by what they saw. And,
the Kentucky State Penitentiary. How many generations of your family have worked at the Kentucky State Penitentiary?
Well, like I said, my father worked there in the 50s. He started out there as a young man and went on to get into law enforcement and work his way up to chief of police in Caldwell County. And my grandfather actually was behind bars there for counterfeiting, bootlegging, that kind of thing.
And then you worked there for a short spell, right?
Yeah. But between there and the farm center, I worked about 10 years there. I also, worked as deputy jailer for a while. It was sort of a family tradition to coin that old country song. But yeah, there's something about it. And it's generational. There's a lot of generational folks there that are with the same name. They've had their granddaddy, great-grandfather, whomever, work there. So it's kind of different. Definitely.
All right, Steve.
A family business for some people.
We're rolling into the top of the hour here. When we come back, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the Kentucky State Penitentiary, the haunting of the Kentucky State Penitentiary, the subject of one of your books. Steve Asher, folklorist, author, researcher. He'll stay with us. Back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.